From their innovative practice facility to unmatched views from the fairway, the PGA of America is helping lower scores and elevate fan experiences with 5G solutions from T-Mobile for Business. Together, we're using AI-powered analytics to expand coaching tools and bringing fans closer to the pros with 5G-connected cameras. This is game-changing innovation. This is the PGA of America with T-Mobile for Business. Take your business further at T-Mobile.com/now.
Hey there. Did you know Kroger always gives you savings and rewards on top of our lower-than-low prices? And when you download the Kroger app, you'll enjoy over $500 in savings every week with digital coupons. And don't forget fuel points to help you save up to $1 per gallon at the pump. Want to save even more? With a Boost membership, you'll get double fuel points and free delivery. So shop and save big at Kroger today. Kroger, fresh for everyone. Savings may vary by state. Restrictions apply. See site for details.
You can live out your MasterChef dreams when you find a professional on Angie to tackle your dream kitchen remodel. Connect with skilled professionals to get all your home projects done well. Visit Angie.com. You can do this when you Angie that.
But they're getting some traction. And right now, the big assets are not there yet, right? Like the BTC Bridge, SBTC is not live. Tether or other big stablecoins aren't live yet. So people are right now trading like these very small assets in a decentralized way and still seeing like significant trading volume. So I think I'm like waiting for like, you know, when people could do like a BTC to Tether trade on the LP. I think that's going to be very, very significant.
Good morning, good afternoon, good evening, everyone. You're listening to another epic episode of the Charlie Shrum Show, where twice a week we dive deep with some of Bitcoin and crypto's most influential leaders, OGs, to truly understand how this movement came to be, where we are right now, where we're going. Sometimes we get the opportunity to like attach ourselves to the projects that are actually leading the pack on what we're talking about in terms of the narratives and the largest excitement, growth, building, developer activity, which has been the Bitcoin layer 2 space. There's a lot of different words for it. The simple fact is that you guys as listeners know that we've been talking about building on Bitcoin for years, I think since day one. We've had our guests on the show before. Munib Ali, thank you so much for coming on the show again.
Absolutely. Thanks for having me.
You are the CEO of Trust Machines, which is the builder, developer, the creator of Stax, the Nakamoto protocol. Have you launched it yet, or is it coming out still in a few months? What's the status of that?
It's very soon. So the launch window sort of starts right before Bitcoin halving, which it's like a week away or something. And then it happens over the next 4 weeks.
What is that development launch that you're excited about?
Yep. Happy to give a background. So Stax is a Bitcoin L2, and we'll get into the definitions, how different people sort of like define the term. But the way to think about this is the first version of Stax went live in early 2021. And after seeing it out in production, seeing a lot of developers and users use it, we had like some, you know, real feedback on what the next version should look like. And I think there are two sort of like big things around that. First is we all know Bitcoin has, you know, 10 to 40 minute block times. And if you look at other crypto networks out there, like Ethereum, Solana, they are now doing much faster block times. We know Bitcoin is like more decentralized, it's more durable. We don't want to change Bitcoin L1, but in terms of the user experience, the UX for average people, there's a huge difference between waiting for a confirmation for 10 to 40 minutes versus just a couple of seconds and you get confirmations, right? So that was the first thing that really stood out, that our system was running at Bitcoin speeds because it's a Bitcoin L2. Everything that happens on the L2 gets sort of like settled on Bitcoin L1. So that also means it was running at Bitcoin speed. So that was one thing that we really worked on over the last year and a half, that how do we give people really fast, really cheap transactions on the L2 that still benefit from 100% of Bitcoin finality, like 100% of Bitcoin security. So that's the one big upgrade that's going live in Nakamoto, where I can get into more details, but at a high level, people can move around their BTC on the L2. It is cheap, it's fast. Within a few seconds, you'll get a confirmation. But as soon as a Bitcoin block arrives, then the sort of like finality or security, the way people think about it, of the transaction is the same as a L1 transaction, which is a very interesting property that, you know, it's cheaper, faster, but from a security perspective, it's like doing a L1 transaction. So the second thing that we really focused on is all these Bitcoin L2s, they're really meant to unlock BTC as programmable money, right? So we want to make it super simple and secure for people to move their BTC from L1 to L2 in a decentralized way. And then it becomes programmable there, meaning that you can deploy it in smart contracts. You can take a stablecoin loan in a decentralized way. You could swap into other assets if you want to do decentralized trading, for example. So those sorts of applications. And that's the second work where our BTC on L2 asset, we call it SBTC, that will be going live shortly after the Nakamoto launch. And think of that as almost like a decentralized bridge from the L1 to the L2. And makes it super simple to move BTC into the L2 and then back.
We talked to you a couple of years ago about this. So, in our small Bitcoin bubbles, we always knew this kind of was the future. But how does it feel that Stacks has kind of become like this household name for Bitcoin scaling, for better and for worse? Do you get social media people from like the Bitcoin world not wanting the relationship? I don't really see that at all. I've seen such a change actually in that world too.
No, there's a big change. So I would say, sometimes I joke that the years between 2017 and 2022 were sort of like the dark ages. So it was interesting that I think we got criticized more during that time, even when the project was smaller. I think generally people were, for various reasons, against this builder's culture on Bitcoin. It could be anything. It could be NFTs. It could be new L2s. It could be new tokens, sure. Meme coins, whatever it is. And I think that there has been a big culture shift, and we can get into some more details on how we have sort of like helped enable some of that as well. But I would go back to the start of Ordinals as one of the big sort of like inflection point, where Ordinals are these NFTs directly on the Bitcoin L1, and they really showed like developer and user interest. Like a lot of people wanted to use these things, and the trading volumes started surpassing like Ethereum and Solana very quickly. And that was a real data point for the market that, these things, when they come to Bitcoin, they actually create a lot of demand.
What really happened, it seemed like, was Bitcoin activity in 2016 kind of like slowed down in allowing anything related to like a colored coin or asset that allowed like anything separate, smart contracts, like even SegWit and Taproot and some of the newer technological upgrades were considered very like taboo, just because what was going on with the ICO kind of market in the early days, it was tarnishing the reputation of like Ethereum. And I think the Bitcoin developers didn't want anything to do with that. And that's where that maximalism. And I don't want to go down that road. I guess what I'm trying to say is like, you guys have fostered this like really nice open communication with all these other Bitcoin scaling companies too. I saw today that you guys just announced a relationship with Portal. That's awesome. Like that you guys are working together. Portal, George Burke, Chandra, they're Bitcoin OGs. They've been around forever. Like that's great that you guys are all working together. I hope to see further relationships with you and some of these other companies. Like that's a big pivot. That's a big shift from what, you could expect when people are trying to like carve out their own business pie.
Yeah. So I think one of the strategies we had in our ecosystem, and it's a very decentralized ecosystem. Sometimes I don't even know what's happening in it.
It's but so crazy now.
One of the strategies we had was let's focus on growing the pie for Bitcoin L2s. Like the pie is very small right now, right? Like if you look at Ethereum, even the ETH L2s are a $70 to $80 billion market, and depending on how you count, the Bitcoin L2s are something like $5 billion right now. And Bitcoin is a much larger asset class, a much larger network, much bigger brand name.
Yes, crazy.
If the focus becomes like, hey, let's try to grow the pie for Bitcoin L2s, then all the early projects really need to work together. So we started organizing these developer events. Like one was in Miami, the Bitcoin Builders event right next to Bitcoin Miami. And we invited everybody. Like we invited the Lightning people, Lightspark, David Marcus was there. We invited the Rootstock folks, like some of their top, co-founders and CEOs from that ecosystem. They showed up, and it was amazing that some of these people might argue with each other on Twitter, and now they're all sitting together taking pictures and breaking bread. And it was like a really nice moment for seeing everyone who's trying to build on Bitcoin be part of the same community. And then what that does is that very quickly from there, it's easier for the outside of Bitcoin industry to ignore like smaller projects. Yeah. But if the Bitcoin projects are sort of like mind as a category, that category is pretty large. So the category becomes like harder to ignore, right? And then what we did was we helped different publications like the Block Research or Blockworks and others, and even certain like institutional investors write about Bitcoin L2s and Bitcoin building on Bitcoin as a category. So I think once people sort of like, you know, read an in-depth research report on like, oh, look, there are like 5-6 different projects. Here are the interesting things they're doing. This is the category and this emerging category. Couple that with, you know, when Bitcoin fees started going up on the L1. So because of Ordinals, we saw like a 200x increase in the fees. So it becomes very clear to people that, hey, the fees are really increasing quickly on the L1. We are going to need L2s. And Bitcoin L2s are emerging as a category at the same time. So then new projects started coming in. And I think that's another thing that we did, that we were very, very welcoming to the new projects. Like literally anyone would start a L2, and instead of criticizing them, even if they're more centralized or whatever the thing is, we would say, hey, we're going to use the term as a very broad category. We welcome all developers. We're going to grow this pie. And I think that sort of resonates, right? Like if people feel welcome, they want to help each other. They want to sort of like, you know, build this category together. And I think that has led to a very sort of like a positive attitude, which is very, very heartening to see. Like Bitcoin hasn't had that in many years before, as you mentioned.
So I understand that kind of the holy grail was this big technology of the relationships between Bitcoin, smart contracts, EVM, being able to do all these different things, freeze your Bitcoin, put it on these secondary layers. Now that we're building out the technology and we're kind of past that, what do we need to build out to prove that there was a reason to build all these things down and get excited about it?
Yeah, so I think I would say the data points that I would look at first would be how much of BTC capital starts moving into these L2s. Right? The largest one in terms of people putting their BTC in any system is actually the wrapped BTC, WBTC, which is just BitGo, right? Like BitGo is bridging it over to Ethereum, and that's like something like $5 billion in market cap. All the other Bitcoin L2s are pretty sort of like small, relatively small right now. I think once we start getting into like hundreds of millions, likely billions of dollars of Bitcoin going into the L2s, like that's going to be very hard to ignore them, like for the larger Bitcoin community, right? Like just like they track how much Bitcoin is going into the ETFs, for example, right? So the ETFs are a very important part of the larger Bitcoin ecosystem at this point, but the L2s are still very small in terms of usage. So I think the number one thing that I'd be interested in is, you know, how much BTC is actually now flowing into the L2s. And then the question becomes, why are people doing this? Right? So some of the use cases would be, for example, if you look at the BTC trading pairs, let's say against Tether on Binance, it's a couple of billion dollars a day, right? Like BTC trades a lot on these centralized exchanges. If you look at Ethereum, ETH trades on centralized exchanges, but ETH also trades on Uniswap or some of the other decentralized exchanges as well. And those trading volumes are pretty meaningful. So I think that would be an interesting thing. Like for people like me and you who probably don't want to trust, you know, any centralized exchange, and if we can just, you know, swap from a self-hosted wallet, that's great. So I'll keep an eye on those trading volumes. So there are early indications already. For example, this one Uniswap-like application called Alex that's built on top of Stacks, it recently saw like $1 billion in total trading volume. So it's not like a day over a day. Obviously, it's total trading volume, but they got 500 million in a couple of weeks.
Really?
But they're getting some traction. And right now, the big assets are not there yet, right? Like the BTC bridge, SBTC is not live. Tether or other big stable coins aren't live yet. So people are right now trading like these very small assets in a decentralized way and still seeing like significant.
It's very early on.
So I think I'm like waiting for like, you know, when people could do like a BTC to Tether trade on the L2. I think that's going to be very, very significant.
If someone can do that in a decentralized way, I think you're right. Like mainstream a product like that would go a long way. Have you sat and thought about potential like real world assets usage on Bitcoin and why people would do that?
Yeah, absolutely. I think there's actually people, there's a startup in the Stacks ecosystem that's trying to bring just the US Treasury bills to the L2. And again, I think Bitcoin to me is, you know, the world reserve currency. Like it's the ultimate store of value. And I would like to see everything trade against it. Right. So it's almost like the opposite view that people had before that, hey, all these other assets are bad for Bitcoin. No, they're not, right? Like they're like, if you look at the dollar, why is the dollar the reserve currency right now? Because it trades against
it's most liquid.
Yeah, exactly. Most liquid, it trades against anything. That's how people measure the price of something against the dollar, because that's the thing you're trading oil with or anything else with. And I think that's what Bitcoin needs to do. I think even like meme coins or whatever, casinos, right? Like if someone's running a casino, do you want them to run a casino in a different currency or do you want them to run it in BTC?
No, you do. You want them to run it, yeah.
Exactly. And then whoever wins in the casino, they will take their savings out in BTC. And I think people are smart enough to realize what is sort of like a meme coin versus what is Bitcoin, right? Like, and
that's definitely a big point.
Play in a casino.
You think the crypto investor, the crypto buyer user has gotten like definitely smarter in the last couple of years?
Yep, absolutely. So I think those are, I almost think of this as if this starts working, now we are giving developers the tools to create an alternate to Wall Street around Bitcoin. And I think that's super exciting, right? Like they can build all sorts of financial products. They can actually start deploying Bitcoin in new ways. And if you remember, Charlie, like in the early days of Bitcoin, we always had this, you know, sort of saying that all the successful experiments in crypto would come back to Bitcoin.
Sure.
And I think this is exactly what's happening now, because Bitcoin pre-2016 is where some of the original experiments happened. Right?
True.
NFT started with Counterparty. Colored coins started there. Like, you know, the first stable coin was Tether on OmniLayer. But then I think when the Bitcoin civil war was happening and Ethereum in 2017 was very welcoming to all these experiments, like the experiments sort of like moved over to Ethereum. And then projects like Solana have looked at it and they've seen what are the DeFi primitives or other products that have product market fit. And they just brought all of those applications to Solana on better, faster rails, right? And if you look at Bitcoin L2s, it's like, okay, we can look at Ethereum and Solana and go like, here are the type of things people want to do. These are the products that have product market fit. We can bring all of this here, but with BTC yes. as the asset instead of like SOL as the asset.
From pit lane to podium, the Las Vegas Grand Prix is providing fans a race day experience at the speed they deserve. With the help of T-Mobile for Business, our 5G advanced network solutions are powering race day operations with event-wide connectivity. From streamlined gate entry to an immersive app, giving fans blazing fast access to the sport they love. This is accelerating innovation. This is the Las Vegas Grand Prix with T-Mobile for Business. Take your business further at T-Mobile.com/now.
You can start your day off right when you find a professional on Angie to get your plumbing right first. Connect with skilled professionals to get all your home projects done well. Visit Angie.com. You can do this when you Angie that.
I think it's as simple as that. It's literally as simple as that.
I just want to say, like, my biggest takeaway that I wanted to get from you is do you kind of feel validated? You know, for a while, a lot of people thought that, you know, building on Bitcoin was kind of like a dead idea.
Yeah, I mean, it's surprising how many people come up to me and say that, right? Like, I sometimes tell this funny story. This is from late 2021, I think, early 2022, maybe. And I was at these crypto founders dinner. And this friend of mine, he introduced me that, hey, meet Muneeb. He's the last person building on Bitcoin. And everyone started laughing. And I was laughing. And the reason why
That's
I was
really
laughing,
great.
Because it was sad and true, right?
Yeah. No, but you weren't. I mean, we were still talking about it. I think you were still are the biggest representation for people. Like when they say, oh, what's going on with building? Well, there's Lightning, but mm-hmm. they're just like, well, check out what's going on with Stacks. Like they actually have huge developer activity and a community that people are excited about. And you were the last bastion for a while.
Yeah, I think let me qualify that statement. Clearly, Lightning has a lot of developers and you know, other projects as well. But I think what the dynamic here is that I was probably one of the few people who would sort of like hang out in the Bitcoin circles, but also go to the rest of the crypto industry.
Yeah.
I think the developers in Bitcoin, they sort of like had blinders on, right? Like, hey, we're not even going to look at what's happening in the rest of the crypto industry. Like they felt very much, you know, like we are just going to build our own thing. And I think that I consider that a mistake, right? Because if you look at the amount of capital raised, the amount of just investment dollars going into R&D, but not just that, even like the brilliant minds, like some of the people that I heavily respected even before crypto, like these are some computer scientists from Princeton, for example, like Ed Felton, who started Arbitrum. I respect that person for all the research he's done even before crypto. And now he's going in and building an L2 on Ethereum. I want to go and learn what he's doing, I think I was one of the few people who was keeping an open mind to the rest of crypto, actually following that industry, like talking to those people, trying to learn from them, and then thinking about ways that how can we bring those lessons to Bitcoin. And I think there were other developers, obviously, in the Bitcoin world, but they're very much like they have blinders on, their heads down, trying to build their own thing in Bitcoin.
Muneeb Ali, thank you so much for taking the time and coming on the show today. I really appreciate it.
Absolutely. Thanks for having me, man.
I'm really excited to have today Andy Fahar Handika. Thank you so much for joining the Charlie Shrem Show. You're the CEO of Loka Mining.
Thank you, Charlie. It's good to be here.
It's good to have you. So I met you during the kind of the crypto bear markets, actually, the Bitcoin bear markets. We have to spend a lot of time kind of like figuring out what is going to be the next trend during the bull markets. And we spent a lot of time like podcasting. I was a mentor. I told my listeners that I'm a mentor for Outlier Ventures, Bitcoin Basecamp. And through the Outlier Ventures, Bitcoin Basecamp, I met some really unique people and doing some really cool things. And Andy, you're one of the most uniquest people that I met, that I really found what you're doing so cool. And really, it's related to Bitcoin mining. Before we get into it, can you give a little bit of background about yourself and what you did before?
Yeah, this is not my first bear market for sure. And I bet it's not your first too. We've been in this bear market for me, it's like probably my third bear market. No, it's like my first Bitcoin is in 2014. So I think I was few years after you, I suppose, because like you're the first OG.
Yeah, right. I mean, it's been such a long time. You created this product that exists on the Bitcoin blockchain that allows for Bitcoin miners to sell kind of like forward contracts of or essentially sell their like hash power. Why do that now? Like, this is a very unique opportunity. How did you get to this point?
Yeah, so I've been playing around with mining business. I do some Bitcoin mining since 2017, like 3 years after I have my first Bitcoin, but it's like a just very simple setup. And I have my co-founder that is actually doing that professionally since 2017. So what we find out is that now Bitcoin mining is not for the hobbyists anymore, right? Like for the last few years become commoditized and becomes like industry. It's a huge industry. Like we have Bitcoin reward based in US dollar, so like $12 billion per year.
Is that how much it is? $12 billion, you think?
Yeah, I mean, like every 10 minutes, you get right now 6.25 Bitcoin, right? 6.25 Bitcoin. So like 144 times per day, because 10 minutes, 144 is like around 10, 12, 25 million per day. And then it's like you calculate, extrapolate to like a 1 year, it's like numbers with that, the price now is going to be like 12 million. Yeah. It's like on a $60,000. Now it's like close to 70,000 again. Yeah. So it is being commoditized. So what we see now is that new mining pools are flourishing. New mining pools are like now two biggest mining pools in the world now have the more than 50% of the hash rate of total hash in the world. Right. So why is that? Because like basically if you're a Bitcoin miners, you need to, it's a race basically because the difficulty keeps increasing because people are racing to get more Bitcoin and every halving, the reward is, it calls halving. The reward is slashed to 50%. It's half to the previous period. And the way the industry heading is if you're Bitcoin miners, then you need to upgrade your mining machine.
Yeah, like every year. Yeah, it's crazy.
Yes, every year. And it means that you need to have liquidity. You need to have upfront capital. So for most miners, for most Bitcoin miners, they need to wait. So the only reward they get is the Bitcoin itself. So they have two options. Right. So selling their Bitcoin for US dollar for or stablecoin and they buy more mining machine to upscale their operation, or they use their Bitcoin, go to DeFi protocol and then put as
you pray
borrow the stablecoin against your Bitcoin. But the problem with that is every bear market, there's a lot of this kind of miners get liquidated. Yeah. That this is like a most of the miners all over the world. But if you're a North American miners, big mining companies, what they do is that they go to NASDAQ, they IPO their company, and then they scoop liquidity from the retails, and they basically get free money to buy more mining machines. And this is why it's getting more centralized and centralized, because like the bigger mining companies are now getting bigger and getting bigger. So what I do is basically to give a better fighting chance for smaller, medium miners to make Bitcoin mining decentralized again, to make everyone get a better chance in this industry.
That's really important. So from a regular user, you have a couple of different products. You have the local mining pool. Anyone can earn passive income by providing Bitcoin liquidity to miners. In exchange, miners get a daily payout based on their hash rate contributions. And then you could also allow people to invest in a Bitcoin mining operation by purchasing collateralized contracts of future hash rate. And you have this kind of mechanism where if a miner kind of removes themselves, there's a collateral and there's a mechanism to prevent investors from losing out. Let me ask you a question. If all mining becomes very institutionalized, are people going to, do you think, use LOCA mining to want to go to individual retail? Or will LOCA mining be kind of just be used for a smaller subset of the mining industry?
That's a really good question, actually. I think the idea is, even though we see the industry is getting more centralized and centralized, there are miners all over the world flourishing with their own unique energy. For example, we have in Indonesia, we have several Bitcoin miners that is basically just plugged in. So let's say in Indonesia, we have hundreds of rivers, and the majority of the energy is actually came from fossil fuel. Why is that? Because not because the renewable energy is expensive.
Energy is really expensive.
Energy is expensive, but not from the generation. It's not the generation, the energy is expensive. It's the logistics. What was happening is that if you have a hydropower plant in some rivers in Indonesia or some other countries, the most expensive part is not the cost of running that hydropower electrics. The most expensive part is to bring that energy to the city, the nearby city. Because if you have very good hydropower energy, a very good river, it's gotta be miles away from the city. And then you need to build infrastructure to move, to transport that energy to the city.
Yeah, there's a lot of slow mining, movement and things like that. So essentially, there'll always be a flourishing amount of people that'll be mining, and therefore they'll always be needing these kind of retail products, if you will.
Yes. For example, in North America, I think the average cost of energy right now is around 6 cents. It's varied, but I think the average is 6 cents per kilowatt hours. And actually, we can get much lower than that in using renewable energy with the condition that we put the mining machine just next to the hydropower plant. So it becomes expensive on the transport. On the logistics, actually. So we have our miners, our miners that is sending hash rate to us, to our mining pool, is on the, we don't really differentiate what kind of energy that they use from the, all. I talk to tons of miners. They have miners in Ethiopia. They're building, Ethiopia government is building a new dam, and because the way Bitcoin mining works is demand on demand. Basically, if you have some excess supply of energy, you just put any Bitcoin mining machine and then you absorb the energy wherever it is. You just need some internet connection and that's it. So yes, mining becomes more industrialized. It's become a commodity, but there are also small to medium mining companies all over the world that don't have access to finance, that they actually have a lot of potential.
Good point.
That's that's how Bitcoin started, right? Not from industry. It's just from people.
You're 100% right.
People trying to solve their
So that's
problem.
Kind of what I'm thinking too. Yeah. I really think that there's always going to be people that'll be mining maybe like 20%. And that's a large enough industry, a total addressable market for you. And even industrial people, I think there's maybe an enterprise version for Loka mining. What other future product do you want to create too?
I think what we have right now, we haven't really launched fully yet. We just have our decentralized mining pool. The product is actually, it's from the perspective of the user, it's quite simple. You put Bitcoin into a liquidity and liquidity pool, basically. So the way mining pool works is there's a bunch of miners that are sending Azure to the mining pool, and then the mining pool is sending Hashra to Bitcoin network, and then basically it converts lottery mechanism for Bitcoin mining or the Bitcoin reward to pro rata distribution. So we need to have miners need to be paid every day,
regardless
we get a new block or not, right? So mining pool needs liquidity
every day
upfront the miners. What we do as a decentralized mining pool is we decentralize the liquidity. Yes. So we enable anyone to put Bitcoin as a liquidity for the Bitcoin miners. And then when the block reward came, we find a new block. Usually the mining pool charges like 2-4% for FTPS. So these fees, the delta is distributed equally to the shares, to all the liquidity provider. So essentially, from the perspective of liquidity provider, you put Bitcoin in and then you get more Bitcoin.
I love it.
And the way it works is we kind of borrow what Ethereum does using Lido, Lido is like liquid staking. Yeah. But it's for us, it's we call it liquid mining. So because it's not staking.
Yeah, that's great.
Staking is basically arbitrary. Staking is arbitrary. You're getting the reward from inflation. Yeah. You put anything, you stake it, and then you put it as validator, basically getting reward from the inflation, you know, from the total economy, the this currency. But for Bitcoin, because we're proof of work, it's actually the reward is coming from, like, it's really tangible. It comes from the hash rate. It comes from energy.
From something real.
It becomes a Bitcoin.
I love it. That's beautiful. Andy, thank you so much for coming on the show today. I really appreciate it.
Yeah. I mean, it's an honor to be here. I've been following. It's basically read about you, listening to your podcast. And it's really an honor to be here, Charlie.
Now, you know that a lot of listeners learn a lot of really amazing things on the show. So I appreciate you contributing to that. And have a great day.
Thank you.
From their innovative practice facility to unmatched views from the fairway, the PGA of America is helping lower scores and elevate fan experiences with 5G solutions from T-Mobile for Business. Together, we're using AI-powered analytics to expand coaching tools and bringing fans closer to the pros with 5G-connected cameras. This is game-changing innovation. This is the PGA of America with T-Mobile for Business. Take your business further at T-Mobile.com/now.
You can start your day off right when you find a professional on Angie to get your plumbing right first. Connect with skilled professionals to get all your home projects done well. Visit Angie.com. You can do this when you Angie that.